This summer, the world's best tennis players are coming back to Cincinnati. The Cincinnati Open returns August 8th through the 23rd. Bigger than ever, with new fan spaces, incredible food, drinks, and entertainment all in one place. Voted Tournament of the Year by the players themselves. Community Weekend starts August 8th. Finals weekend, August 22nd and 23rd. Get your tickets now at cincinnatiopen.com.
Off the ball, rugby.
Get rid of this mindset of let's get through the quarterfinals, because the bigger you make it, that's going to be your ceiling.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The news round on Off the Ball.
With UPMC Orthopaedic Care. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.
This is News Talk.
Good evening, you're welcome along to Monday night's Off the Ball. It's Owen here with you until 10 o'clock this evening. Coming up tonight, we're going to be speaking to Fiona Hayes and Liam Toland on Monday Night Rugby. Both of them, spoiler alert, are quite satisfied with how things played out on Saturday night in Croke Park. On the football show from 9 o'clock, Miguel Delaney is going to join us fresh from Anfield yesterday, where Liverpool were beaten by Manchester United at home for the first time since early 2016. Also on the football show, we'll be joined by Chloe Singleton of Athlone Town. She made her comeback last weekend for the outfit after being out for over 400 days with a terrible injury she suffered in the summer of 2024. But she's back and she got onto the pitch for the last 10 minutes yesterday in the FAI Cup final, where Athlone beat Bohemians. Our number is 087-9180-180 if you want to drop us a WhatsApp message. Stephen Doyle and Michael McCarthy are both with me in studio. Good evening to you both, gents. It kind of feels like this weekend would have been a great weekend for the celebration police. If you want to go out and actually be joyous in a moment, you better make sure it's May, is what the cynic inside me was thinking as I was pretty joyous about Munster winning on Saturday night. So, it kind of feels like I was vulnerable to somebody saying, come back to us in April, come back to us in May, and let's see where your smiles are then. And I think the same could have been said for Manchester United.
I hadn't thought of it that way, Owen, and now I'm thinking of it like, yeah, Jesus, it's an easy one for the begrudgers if you want to take out, you know, October wins as something serious. But I don't know, as a Munster fan, it's a long time since I've experienced something quite like that. Obviously, they beat Leinster at a pretty big game closer to May just a couple of years ago. Yeah. But this felt more significant or something, didn't it? It felt not significant in terms of its place in the season or anything like that, but its play in the sort of changing of the guard slightly. I think it's fairly too early to say that, but it's the first time it's felt like that in a long time. We all knew the 2023 game was... Not quite a one-off.
A smash and grab,
yeah, let's put it that way. Whereas this was Munster at their Munster best.
And I think if we're drawing big conclusions between the two big fixtures over the course of the weekend, I think there's still a far more tenuous link between, you know, what happened yesterday at Anfield and Manchester United actually usurping Liverpool than what happened on Saturday night. And I'm not saying Munster are going to win more trophies than Leinster at the end of this season or at the end of next season even, but it feels like a more seismic moment in the grand scheme of things. There are fewer games in a season. There are fewer games with all your frontline players available
exactly.
to you.
It felt like it. It just felt like, how many times have we had this expectation when we're trying to big up this game? Because the true start of the season is the Leinster-Munster game in Dublin. And, you know, we'll get into November then and rugby will be back. But there wasn't really much feeling that Munster could do it. We had a little conversation about it at the start of Friday night show. And I kind of was saying that, you know, the distance, like much like the distance from Ireland soccer matches a lot of the time after a long break in between international windows, gives you that bit of belief. But we kind of quickly came to the conclusion that that was psychotic. And of course, there was no reason to believe, and Leinster would just do what they always do in this October fixture. But, you know, it really, you kind of felt that at halftime there was almost an exhale and you were like, wow, really, really saw something there, you know? Now, a lot of the Leinster players really weren't on form. Were they allowed to play? There's loads of questions like that that I'm sure we'll get into in more detail in Monday Night Rugby. But you would still back Leinster to, like, you know, get further in both competitions with a gun to your head, I would say, at this stage of the season. But the fact is that Munster are competitive now, you know, and we talked even earlier in the year about winning those first three games and how important that is in terms of how they will relax into the season. and not be always looking over their shoulder and worried about qualification and playing in a panic. This gives a platform to go and use what they've done early in the season to go and express themselves and actually play the kind of rugby that they've been wanting to play.
Maybe, like, and we can talk about this in the United context as well in a moment, but it's in keeping with our theme this year of proving people wrong. And, like, I think that the Munster... Well, yeah, dressing room wall, that the Munster win was based on the sort of Andy Farrell 21-4.
Yeah.
You've picked so many Leinster men, you've picked no Munster men. We've proved you wrong. And I guess the grim reality is actually Munster have fewer players in the Ireland squad now than they did on Saturday evening. They've had a Tom Farrell, but now they've got two injuries.
Interesting thing, Owen, is that, and you'll hear it later on, some interesting Robin McBride, who's the forwards coach with Leinster, some audio from him later on in the news round. But he was asked about the likes of Milne and Barron, two players that Leinster had discarded and sent down to Munster, and he was praising their performances. But imagine two players like that were going into that game against Croke Park saying, we're going to prove Leinster wrong.
Yeah, true.
That you let us go. So that plays into your little team of proving people wrong. But, like, come on. Like, you got to celebrate the wins. Isn't this something that managers and coaches are doing all over the place now, is telling players, like, not to be kind of going, all right, lads, you've got to be careful now. This is not a big game. And interestingly, Munster do play Connacht in another Interpro next week against Stuart Lancaster, who was probably really unlucky to get a one-point defeat against the Bulls at the weekend. He seems to be kind of definitely developing that team, and I think they're going to get better and better. So that'll be interesting. But, you know, this Munster team, I said it to you last week, I thought Clayton McMillan was really interested in the build-up, talking about how the team aren't, he doesn't think they're as fit as they can be. You know, it was a bit of rope-a-dope maybe being played there by McMillan, but he certainly seems to have got that Munster team playing for him. And why not celebrate the win now? Who cares whatever happens later in the season? You got to bottle those good feelings, all that positivity, and keep it going into next week.
I agree completely. Games can be for themselves as well, and I would say that applies to Anfield as well. But there's 50,000 people, which I saw some people hilariously describing as a disappointing crowd. You know, the biggest game you'll see in club rugby this season, like 50,000 people still for an early season URC game, is phenomenal.
And if you had told people the results beforehand,
it would have been 80.
Well, yeah,
probably.
I thought it wouldn't have been much.
If you told people that, it would have been a really, really close contest beforehand, which it actually ended up
being.
People would have, I think, because last year Croke Park felt like such a damp squib in terms of a contest.
Yeah.
I think that dissuaded even a few, at least another 10,000 from picking up a ticket.
Absolutely. And what we ended up having then was that that occasion in itself, Munster with a big performance and a big win. I completely agree that that should be celebrated for what it is, and not everything always needs to be put in the big picture, especially when you're a fan. Enjoy these things. And if you're a Manchester United fan, enjoy yesterday. But just before we move on to that from Munster, what's going to be on the dressing room wall before they play in Limerick later this year? And I'll tell you what it's going to be. This time it was like, oh, there's no Munster players in the Ireland squad and so on, right? And this time it's going to be those Leinster fans coming out all magnanimous after. This is how little they think of you. Their biggest rival beat you, and they're like, oh, it's probably good for Irish rugby. You know, I was like, get out of town. Get salty, Leinster fans, or this is going to come back to haunt you. That's all I'll
surely,
say.
Surely there's a little bit of saltiness, no? Was it all magnanimous?
Well, all I saw was fair play to Munster, better team on the day. You have to hand it to them. This is great. This is great for Irish rugby. Gives Leinster the kick up the ass. The only negative I saw was towards Leinster.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There was none of this kind of, like, you know, enjoy your moment in the sun. What will be like? There was no putting down of Munster or their last or their record over the last 10 or 20 years, or 10 years, I suppose, which was, you know, some would say refreshing. Others would say disappointing.
We're all just getting to know this rivalry again, it seems. We don't know how to behave.
If it's going to be a rivalry, let's make it a rivalry.
Yeah. Mm. I think one of the...
I agree, though. Like, you want a bit of spice between the fans, you know?
Yeah, the... consequences of this, and I don't know, is it too fine a point to put on it, but the consequence seems to be that Andy Farrell has got his out half decision made for him ahead of November. It feels I don't know, like, I think that it definitely leans the debate in Jack Crowley's favour after what happened on Saturday night. I think some people will say that there is no debate anymore after Saturday night. I think that the debate is definitely is always going to be live when it comes to Andy Farrell and the selections that he's made at number 10 until this point. But if you don't want to get drawn into that conversation, I think one of the things that you can take from Saturday is Jack Crowley's behaviour at all times on Saturday. Like, people will have seen the huddle before the teams went into the dugouts at halftime, and the big G-ing up speech that he gave to his teammates before going in for their break, before the second half. And even those small little bits are being used as a sort of, look at this leader, look at what he's doing. And he's had a brilliant start to the season, brilliant performance on Saturday night. And it almost feels that the online discourse is conversation over.
Like, a spectacular performance on Saturday night. Like, his especially in the first half, I thought, I haven't seen an Irish out half run a game like that, whose name wasn't Jonathan Sexton, in so many years. Like, it was absolutely brilliant. He did everything. He actually even made a few mistakes that were of the kind of, like, he's trying something here, his brain's in the right place, and you know what? He's got the freedom to go and do it because he's got the confidence that the next time it comes, he'll try something else and that'll work. I thought he was absolutely brilliant. And you say debate rages on or it's swung in his favour. The reason I kind of reacted, I don't know if cynical is the right word, cynically, but I'm not sure. I just don't know. I thought that Jack Crowley was playing much better rugby than Prendergast for the majority of last season.
So that's why
he wasn't getting in the team ahead of him. So,
but who was being selected? Prendergast was being selected.
Until he picks Crowley, I'm not sure he's going.
Yeah, exactly. So this idea that the debate is now over and that everybody's like, oh, it's 100% going to be Crowley. I just don't.
But I think if he picks if he picks Prendergast now, I think there'll be some serious backlash. And for the first time since 2020, I think there'll be some serious questions about Andy Farrell. Mm. Because whether people are right or wrong, I just think that performance was so stark. And it wasn't a one-off. And it came off the back of arguably Crowley being in better form for nearly a year than Prendergast and not getting selected. So, you know.
David in Port Leash has been in touch to say there's not enough recent beef for there to be salt.
I like it.
I thought there were Munster fans down there.
But surely salt goes into beef to preserve it, which means it could last for an awful long time. Isn't that how they kept beef for the winter back in the days?
Back in
the pre-refrigeration days. Saying that, like, salted beef can last an awful long time. So you can go back many years into your Crow Park and Aviva Stadium.
The old American frontiers as they were...
Fansdown Road, actually.
Crossing.
Right? Yeah. That was where they had salted beef.
The old explorers, the cowboys and...
Salted buffalo.
Yeah. I think Clayton McMillan said this exact thing in the dressing room on Saturday night, actually.
Is there enough buffalo between Leinster and Munster these days?
The news round is with UPMC Sports Surgery Clinic. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action. You're going to start with Anfield yesterday afternoon, Steve-O.
Yes, indeed. Liverpool beaten 2-1 by their arch rivals, Manchester United, for the first time at Anfield since 2016. And it was the first time in 11 years that Liverpool lost 4 consecutive Premier League matches. Former Liverpool defender Jamie Carragher has called for Mo Salah to be dropped for the club's next few games. The 33-year-old's form has been questioned in recent weeks, and he is due to play at the Africa Cup of Nations later this season. The striker missed a couple of key chances in the Merseysiders 2-1 defeat, and Slot, though, refused to single him out for criticism after the game.
I think it's quite normal. The first 5 or 6 games, it was every question I got were about the new players. Now you ask me about another individual. I don't think it's the time to talk about individual performances. But as a team, we expect more than where we are at the moment. And as a team, I don't think we are used to a Liverpool team. Certainly as long as I'm here, and I don't think it was any different when Jürgen was here, that we miss so many chances. And like I said, Mo had a good chance today, but we just talked about Cody, who had 4 or 5 maybe. Hugo Ekitike was a few times really close. Alexander Isak went 1-on-1 to the goalkeeper in the first half. We had 10 sort of corner kicks. I think they only had 4. We don't score, they score. So this weekend again, as it's shown so many times recently, that set pieces are such a crucial part in football.
Ruben Amorim was delighted to get his first back-to-back wins in the Premier League since taking over in November of last year. And just to rub more salt into those Scouser wounds, he admitted he wasn't happy with his team's performance.
I think we start really well. I think we had a great spirit during the game. I think we didn't play well with the ball, just certain moments. We create chances. We suffer some chances also. We lost a little bit the composure in the second half. We managed well when we suffered the goal. We managed that moment well, and that is a key point for our team. So I think it was a great win. Not a very well played game from our part, but a great spirit, and that is the only thing I can ask.
Yeah, like just to go back to what Arne Slot was saying and the Jimmy Carragher suggestion around Mo Salah, there's no question that something doesn't feel right about their attack. It feels that the obvious reason for that is that there's a collection of new players there who haven't got to know each other just yet, and that could well turn out to be true. It just feels like Liverpool's defence is clearly the thing that's costing them the most points relative to the rest of their rivals at the moment. The fact that they keep going down 1-0 early in games and then they have to go in search of that equaliser and subsequently potentially a winner is not working in their favour. Slot speaks about their deficiencies in terms of defending set pieces at the moment. Like, the fullback situation is a bit of a nightmare for them at the moment as well. I think for me, that's where Slot should be looking to make an instant impact and to try and consolidate and move up those top four or five positions in the table.
I agree. I think that that's a much bigger conversation, but it's probably not as sexy as talking about whether Mo Salah should be dropped or not. But like,
and you can have both of these conversations. Yeah, and in fairness,
I agree. But I don't know if. I think it's the circumstances of the games. Like, and also, I actually think we should talk up Manchester United and not be. I'm not being negative, and I know I generally look at these things and think, yeah, but right. But considering where they've been, going to Anfield, putting in a performance like that and coming back from the equaliser, I think as well, showed a lot of character. And actually, you'd be heartened to hear Amram there not be blinded by what actually happened on the night and talk about the fact that, they actually didn't play all that well, but they did everything you want to have in terms of like showing that team spirit and everything like that that you wouldn't be 100% sure about from United. But from Liverpool's point of view, like, they could have won the game. They could have scored five. You know, I'm not saying...
So could United.
Yeah, true. I just don't know if Liverpool are that far off it clicking in attack. The problem is that I don't know how the current shape of the team with the fullbacks that they have and the midfield protection that they have is going to stop being leaky. Now, they could play a different way. They played a different way against Arsenal. And in one of the Champions League games, I can't remember which one, and it worked, but
the Atletico game.
I don't think they want to play that way. I think Slot wants to find the rhythm in the attack that he wants to play in and is willing to give it a little bit of time.
I think, and we were having Keith Tracy on this game yesterday, I feel that the major issue is actually in the two holding midfielders. I felt yesterday Ryan Gravenberch was just looked absolutely swamped in there because Alexis McAllister isn't up to the pitch of it just yet. Now, he obviously got a bit of a head injury at the start, but he went off and played for Argentina in the international break. That's the first time he started after an international break in I can't tell you how long. But he missed all of pre-season because of his injury. And it's been said, I think it was one of the Liverpool reporters, James Pearce, was saying on one of the podcasts last week that people at the club were saying to him that McAllister has been completely affected by the lack of pre-season training, which is something as well that Alexander Isak has suffered. So, but I think it's completely obvious in the middle of the pitch. There's just, they don't have the ability to shut down teams before they get to Van Dijk and Konate. And it means then that Konate and Van Dijk are unsure whether to step in because of the deeper line that they're playing. But look, there's a myriad of issues going on there, I think, with Liverpool. There's also obviously the fact of new players coming in, trying to gel with teammates. But I do think the Salah thing is a glaring, glaring problem now at this stage. And just because he's not contributing anything, he didn't contribute anything to that game yesterday. He had a couple of chances, which by his
standards, would you be saying the same thing?
Well, no, because he's scoring. If you're scoring goals, you can't criticise a player who's employed to score goals. But the thing was, what highlighted the problem of Salah even more was that when he came off, Frimpong made such an impact in that position. He actually created a couple of chances the minute he came off the bench, and you're actually thinking that Slot should have made that change about 10 minutes earlier, because if he had it done, Frimpong would have had a bigger impact on the game. Now, I'm not saying that Salah's written off now for the rest of the season or for the rest of his year and a half, whatever is left on his contract. But if he's not playing well at the moment, Slot's going to have to bite the bullet and just say, right, I'm going to change this now. You take a couple of weeks, just try and refresh yourself for whatever he needs to do. But it's just not working at the moment. So Slot needs to... Like, it was all well and good last season, you know, it was all kind of tiptoe through the tulips and there was no problems. They didn't have to worry about dropping players or anything like that. But now he's under pressure. He was complaining before the game yesterday that United rotated their team. He was like, he said, Šeško's played the last five or six matches and now he's not playing. Like, you know, like, it's like, well, you know, that's every team is squad rotating. Like, you can't be complaining about this stuff.
So I saw... people complaining about Arne Slot being a bad loser after the game when he said that if you play Manchester United, they're going to come here with the low block and long balls. You know, it's going to be difficult. I'm not sure.
It's Manchester United away.
Yeah, like I'm not necessarily sure that's automatically. Maybe what you're saying is true about pre-game, but the post-match stuff is Arne Slot being a sore loser. Like, we've been speaking for the however long the season's been going so far about how football has gone back to a fairly rudimentary style of play. It's what everybody's doing. Just because Arne Slot says you're going to play long balls in a low block automatically makes him a slow loser. It is a fact that that is how Manchester United played yesterday, and it was very, very successful of them. I don't think it's necessarily a negative appraisal. Like, the Lammens comments afterwards were really interesting. He was saying that if we want to beat Liverpool, we've got to drop our number nine, put in a false nine, play long balls, and hope we win those duels by going long. And that's how he planned to win the game. Like, that's just what Manchester United did. There's nothing wrong with it.
Yeah, I didn't think it was a sore loser comment. I thought it was a criticism of themselves for knowing what they were going to be facing and not being able to manage it.
Yeah.
You know, that's how I would have saw it. Maybe that's looking too kindly. I have to say, I've kind of been through that a little bit today in general and last night, because I don't know about you guys, and look, you can be terminally online in these things as well and see only what's being said online and not what the wider fan bases are thinking or saying. I'd be interested in listeners' point of view on this as well. But the Liverpool fans have been incredibly negative from what I've seen, and like, angry, you know. And I saw like a few things that are fairly like are good points. Like, you know, if you're a Liverpool manager, you can't lose four games in a row. I saw one person make a really good point that, like, the last time they did it was 2014, and somebody said it wasn't okay even when Paul Konchesky was in the team. It's certainly not okay now. And I do realize that they've spent an awful lot of money this year, right? But they did win the league last year. Mm. Unexpectedly, some would say. And, you know, they're also human beings. And I saw an awful lot of, like, anger towards Slot, like, really kind of, like, you know, questioning his future. You know, I don't think anybody's calling for him to be sacked at the moment, but it's not that far off, I have to say, right? And just anger at the decisions they're making, anger at the way they're playing and so on. It's like, they spent a lot of money, they're finding their way in the team, they're human beings, and I don't like talking about this because it's not relevant to football, but it is also true. They've went through a lot this year. They went through a lot this summer, and they're affected by that, I think. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And it's like people criticising Slot for taking holidays and things like that. You know what I mean? I'm really surprised by the discourse around Liverpool, considering, and I know that they're one of the biggest clubs in the world, and I know they've spent a huge amount of money and success is expected, right? But they also haven't had that much of it over many, many years. And they won the league last year. And now we're in this kind of talk. Mm. You know, because they've lost a couple of games. And I don't think anybody thinks this is going to continue.
Yeah, I think it is. I think it is way too negative. Like, even the stadium yesterday was absolutely flat as a pancake. There was no atmosphere after the initial You Never Walk Alone pre-kickoff. But, like, if you look at the table, they're on 15 points after 8 games. They're only 4 behind Arsenal. Now, it is, what's that, about a 9-point swing since Liverpool had gone clear of Arsenal earlier in the season. That's not great, but they're still in third position. They're still not far off the top. And if this does click, this could be a really, really brilliant Liverpool team with those players all playing at their best. So, listen, I don't think people should, or Liverpool supporters should be getting panicked. On the sore loser thing quickly, like, show me a manager who isn't, you know, absolutely peed off with his team after being beaten. If my manager wasn't being a sore loser after the game, I'd have to be questioning my manager, you know. But just to go back to what Mick was saying about we should praise United as well, because when I looked at those starting teams, I was looking at, oh my God, Harry Maguire's anchoring the back three. Oh my God, Luke Shaw. Actually, I heard a stat that the only two players in that United squad yesterday who had experienced a victory at Anfield were both Luke Shaw and Mason Mount, when they were respectively with Southampton and Chelsea. But when you're looking at the team, but you know what was good about United? You know what was good about United yesterday was, I was scratching my head when they signed Mboumo Nkunku, and I was going, why is he doing this? Because he doesn't want to play the way Wolves and Brentford play. He wants to play, Ruben Amorim that is, with the team camped in the other side's half, putting pressure on them, surrounding their defence, all that kind of stuff. But yesterday, they played the way Mboumo and Cunha can be effective. If you watch Cunha playing for Wolves last season or Mboumo playing for Brentford, they were playing in teams that soaked up pressure and hit teams on the counter-attack. And that's where they will be at their most effective. And I think if Ruben Amorim takes anything from yesterday's game, it's that you got to play in the counter-attack. And even actually our colleague Phil Egan was saying to me, some United fans were getting a bit pressure, saying, that's not the way United play, we don't play. Alex Ferguson played counter-attacking football at times, which, you know, some of their best goals, Ryan Giggs scoring against Aston Villa, the famous one, the cup, that was a counter-attacking goal. So it's like, you know, anyway, that's my...
Shrewdy one has been in touch on YouTube to say it absolutely was a sore loser comment. He also complained about United changing their lineup, LMAO. Well, yeah, I said Steve-O talking about the lineup thing. Maybe that is a little bit of a, you know, a spicy thing to say. I think this. I do not subscribe to the low block direct thing being a sore loser comment whatsoever. That is no longer a pejorative remark about an opposition. If your opponent plays a low block and plays long balls, you are allowed to say that your opponent has played long balls and has played a low block without being accused of being a sore loser. Mm. Pep Guardiola went to the Emirates and played a long block. Low block, long balls this season.
I mean,
we need to disassociate those two things. I understand in previous years, it was seen as like, oh, they're playing Big Sam tactics, parking the bus and playing the ball long. That day is over. Football has changed. Like, it actually is old news. We're in the middle of October. We've identified this from August. Football has changed. If a manager comes out and says they've sat back and have gone long, it is not a negative thing about your team. As much as Liverpool, or as much as United fans want to think that about Arne Slot, I'm sorry, you can find other things that he said that makes him a sore loser. But it's not that. I disagree fundamentally with it, because it was a big sort of very online conversation that was happening yesterday evening at around 6:30.
And who cares anyway?
Like, if you're a United fan,
I'd want Slot to be a sore loser. I'd want them to be like cribbing about it, you know, that would feel good.
Can I just, like, I mean, you said earlier on, like, I haven't paid too much attention to what the online discourse is around Slot's future from Liverpool fans who are being overly reactive. I think if it even veers towards the idea that his job is in danger, I think they have officially jumped the shark.
We're clearly trying to say it, but weren't brave enough.
Ridiculous. You know? Like, ridiculous if that's the case. What, like, 4 points off the top, they're in third place at the moment. That attack is going to click. They've signed some brilliant players. It's going to take a little bit of time. It is going to be absolutely fine. It might cost them the Premier League title this season if Arsenal's defensive record continues the way it is, if Manchester City managed to continue their run of form, but it's not a long-term issue.
Do you know who they're playing next week?
Who? United?
No, Liverpool. They're away to Queeveen Kelleher's Brentford.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Now, there's a man who'll have a point to prove.
Playing tonight, Steve-O?
Yes, indeed. Brentford are playing against West Ham.
Nice segue.
So, it's a first home game in charge for West Ham boss Nuno Espirito Santo, and he's hoping that they can get their first home win of the season. Brentford, of course, managed by our own Keith Andrews, has started with Queeveen Kelleher in goal, Nathan Collins at centre-half. They've got Coyote, Vandenberg and Ayer making up that back four. Henderson, Yarmolenko in midfield. Ouattara, Damsgaard and Shadé across the attacking midfield line with Thiago up front. A couple of interesting selections by Nuno Espirito Santo. Ollie Scarls comes into the starting team for them. That's his first appearance in about a year, I think, in the West Ham starting team. Also coming in is Todibo into that back four alongside Kilman and Walker Peters. Areola's in goal, and then they've got Andy Irving playing the Scotland international midfielder, is holding midfield with Socek, and then it's Bone Fernandes and Somerville with Lucas Paqueta playing up front.
Okay, we have Sean Dyche. He's the favourite currently to get the Forest job, Steve-O.
Yeah, well, Sky Sports are reporting today that he had verbally agreed to take over Forest. The former Everton and Burnley boss could be confirmed as Ange Postecoglou's successor this evening or tomorrow. He looks set to take charge for his first game on Thursday in the Europa League against Porto.
You are hightailing it to Deli Mount Park this evening. We've got some team news.
Oh, cannot wait. Yes, indeed. Lee Kavanagh coming in for Bohemians to replace centre-back Rob Cornwall, while winger Connor Parsons is in for Archie Meekison. So, Bo, starting with Haraska in goal, Morahan, Kavanagh, Byrne and Flores at the back. It's Devoy and McDonald holding midfield with Tierney, Parsons and Rooney in the attacking midfield line, just behind James Clark as the false nine. Douglas James-Taylor had a hamstring problem, but he is on the bench. No changes for the Saints. I was at their game on Friday night against Shamrock Rovers. They've gone again with Anang in goal. Schoberg, Redmond, Gravosti and Kazim at the back. Lennon and Forrester and Bagley in midfield. Levy, Power and Melia up front. Bowes fourth in the Premier Division as they entertain the Saints in sixth, but there's only a point separating the sides and that kicks off at 7:45.
We have 2024 accounts for the FAI.
Yes, and it is a mixed bag. The association still carrying €42 million debt, but did manage to trim €1.2 million off the 2023 total. Commercial revenues up from €20.8 million to €22.9 million, thanks to Sky's decision to sponsor the men's senior team as well as the women's. Match-related income decreased from €18.6 million to €14.3 million, a drop of over €4.3 million. The FAI highlighting the Women's World Cup as part of the reason for the higher figure in 2023, while there were fewer home internationals last year. The figures were released out of the AGM, which takes place next month.
You wanted to say something about Ange?
I just want to talk about Saturday morning and how dream teamy it all was. So it was like when I think when Chelsea scored the second goal, TNT cut to the empty seats, dramatically empty seats of the owner who had been there up until a few minutes before, I think. And then obviously they lost 3-0. It's like shots of Ange constantly. And then I just turned off. I rarely watched the kind of post-match on the Saturday afternoon because you've got your kind of 20 minutes before football starts again where you're trying to organise your life. And next thing I start getting texts, oh, Ange, and I'm like, oh, yeah, hammered again kind of thing. And I was like, no, he's like sacked. It's like, how quickly did they do it? It just seems like it was just this... I read the kind of what seemingly happened and he just went back in and said goodbye to the players, but it all just felt very kind of like, did it really need to be done in the stadium at this exact moment? I don't know. It just feels dramatic. It felt like
I'd love to see Marinakis in the dugout for the Porto game just to like really cap off the farce that it has become. It would be amazing, wouldn't it? Like, why just put yourself in there? Well, you probably have to
get... in the dugout, you just can't go into the technical area, is it?
Yeah, get Woan and Stone yeah, beside him there. Ian Woan and Steve Stone.
Was it Filippo Giovagnoli Shane Keegan out into the technical area of the Emirates against Arsenal that time. Is Sean Dyche not who Marinakis should have appointed in the first place? Or did he hate Nuno Espirito Santo so much that he just wanted the antithesis of him because why not? And even though the style would have been perfect...
Well, there's a few he wants. Marco Silva is another one that they've been looking for. Roberto Mancini as well. But
Mancini's style would fit.
You would think so, yeah. And Silva would probably work as well, but he's only got 6 months, or he still has 6 months left on his Fulham contract, so they'd have to either buy him out, which would probably cost him a lot of money. Fulham would probably play hardball there, or else wait till the end of the season. So, like, he needs it. Like, I'd say Marco Silva's probably thinking, well, the job's probably going to be up for grabs at the end of the season anyway, so I might as well sit it out. But, like, it's a very uninspired choice, you have to say, Sean Dyche, even though he is a Forest man through and through. I'm sure the supporters will give him, you know, maybe a bit more leeway than Ange Postecoglou got. But it doesn't really get you up out of bed in the morning, does it, Mick?
No, it doesn't, but if they start winning games, like, you know, they couldn't continue like this, but... You know, I don't know. Is it like Dyche is in a terrible situation now where this is his reputation is like, you know, bringing in like the saver for the scrap at the bottom. Like, it'll keep him in a job, but I don't think it'll do great work for his long term reputation in football.
No.
Well, I suppose he'll have that niche, which is fine.
Unless the reality is that Forest really are deserving of where they finished last season, and that wasn't an overachievement by Nuno. And Sean Dyche actually achieved a mid-table finish from this, which guarantees him football next year guarantees him a job with the same club next year. And it's still a very talented squad. Like, I mean, Chris Wood, if he was picking a manager, he'd be picking Sean Dyche. It's the thing I keep going back to about the Ange thing. When his position as a starting striker for the team was in threat because Ange wanted to play with a different type of striker, you knew immediately that this was the wrong manager for Nottingham Forest.
Yeah.
When you're one of your most important players, if not your most important player last season, his place is in threat. It's a wrong appointment. Whereas, but Sean Dyche, Wood is definitely going to be starting.
And who were the other two? What was the team built on last year? It was the two centre halves that again are playing in a different system that doesn't suit them, and it's perfect again. That's exactly what Dyche should be playing. It'll be four
Yeah.
Something akin to 4-4-2 anyway.
Well, the other one was Sells. A lot of people say Chris Wood is having the season of a lifetime last season. Well, Matt Sells was as well, because he's been absolutely stinking the house out.
Yeah.
Like, really poor. Now, I don't know if that's down to his poor defence in front of him. We'll see. But
It's on Saturday, the free kick was a shocking attempt. The thing is, Nottingham Forest could have won the game on Saturday. The chances they had in the first half.
Even when they were behind in the second half, they kept creating. Like, it was one of those things, was like, surely. You know, I was like, oh, how have they conspired to miss that?
Somebody's been in touch to help you out, Steve-O. The phrase that Stephen was looking for was, show me a good loser and I'll show you a loser. Show me a good loser and I'll show you a loser. Sorry, I mean, this is why you need to read texts in your head before you read them out loud. Show me a good loser and I'll show you a loser. You're welcome, says the text.
Well, thank you very much. Listen, we all need help every now and again.
Also, Liverpool fan here. No trophies given out in October. It's a work in progress. Salah deserves to be dropped. Need to sort the midfield cover. Too much space between the lines in defensive transition, especially when there isn't the press that we used to have. Slot has said himself the priority is the Champions League. Teams flying in October rarely win that. Yeah, I suppose Paris Saint-Germain are a case in point.
Yeah, teams flying in October often win the league, I would say.
Recency bias here.
Last season.
We have a couple of stories before you leg it, Steve-O. Which player of Dublin's gilded era is taking over the under-20s?
This is an interesting one. Johnny Cooper, in what will be the seven-time All-Ireland winner's first job in management, is taking over the Dublin under-20 footballers. Cooper's former teammate, Michael Darren McCauley, will be part of the Nafina Man's backroom team as they chase a first Leinster crown since 2020. I don't know where McCauley gets the time.
We also have some snooker news before we wrap it up.
Yeah, Aaron Hill, he's been having a great couple of weeks. He's back on our back here on Irish soil. He's up playing the Northern Ireland Open, as they call it, up at the Waterfront Hall in Belfast. He played his first round match against China's Li Pifan. The Pifan won the first round, I should say, but then the Cork man won the next four to take that 4-1. He plays Barry Hawkins in the second round.
Stephen Doyle, thank you for that. Enjoy Daily Mount this evening. We're going to take a quick break and bring you some of the rugby audio from the Leinster presser today.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With UPMC Sports Surgery Clinic. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.
This is News Talk.
You're welcome back. Monday Night Rugby with Fiona Hayes and Liam Tolan coming up after 8 o'clock. After 9 o'clock, we're going to have Miguel Delaney on the football show. He's going to be reflecting on what happened at Anfield yesterday. We're also going to be joined by Chloe Singleton of Athlone Town, who won the Women's FAI Cup yesterday. As I say, loads to get stuck into when it comes to Liverpool versus Manchester United yesterday. But a couple of other bits are in danger of falling between the cracks of a Monday evening, Mick, but we're not going to allow that to happen. Talk to us about Aston Villa. They are so back. Going to Tottenham Hotspur yesterday.
5 wins in a row. Yeah. They were brilliant yesterday, I thought, especially in the second half. 1-0 down after 3 minutes. I think everybody at this stage will have seen the unbelievable second goal from Emi Buendia with the amazing ball volleyed pass from Matty Cash out to Luca Dean on the right wing to set it up. But I actually wasn't really able to watch that in all too much detail. On I had it on in the kitchen. It was my son's birthday party yesterday.
Happy birthday.
Yeah, it's his birthday this week. We had his party early, so there was some people over in the house, and I rather antisocially did put on the match, but I kept the volume down and I was engaging in conversation. So I saw the big events, let's say, but I wasn't following as closely as I usually would for a Villa match at 2 o'clock on a Sunday. However, there was a point earlier in the day which was even more antisocial and bizarre, because the club in Clare, in Killaloe, Smith O'Brien's, were in the Clare intermediate hurling final yesterday. And because of the birthday and so on, we didn't go down. My dad was over, and there was a moment where we were listening to the commentary on the radio, on Scariff Community Radio, and so we were kind of in the corner to bemused partygoers, kind of wondering what they're doing, listening to these kind of like, you know, deranged country voices shouting at a hurling match on the radio, and kind of living and dying by it. But it was all going badly. They had a goal disallowed with a couple of minutes to go to get it back ahead. It was controversially disallowed. Then Aina Kilimona, who they were playing, scored a point. It was 2-up, and basically we're in last puck of the game territory. And then this happened.
into Minogue. Minogue blocks it down. Carl Stritch, brilliant save by Pekin. Carl Stritch, what a goal!
Wow.
So a goal in literally the last second of the game. After, and again, when you're listening to the radio and you're dying by it, a save first. You're like, oh no, another chance gone. I can't believe it. Because you know at that point where you're like, they've had their goal chance. The other team has scored. Time's basically up. And you're kind of saying, well, they're not going to just, they're not going to get, they need a goal now and they're not going to get a goal. Like, you know, and you're just sort of a little bit deflated. And so anyway, cue delirious celebrations in the kitchen, and my sister was around, she was listening in as well. She's so the three of us are going kind of mad, and everybody else is just, including the kids, are just going like, what is going on here? The beauty of the GAA and local sport and so on, like that, this was brilliant. Like, it was everything. And obviously, like, I mean, and then Torna outside, who's from Wicklow, comes in and tells me, he goes, you should talk about the Wicklow intermediate final. There were 2 points down and they got a goal with the last thing of the game to win it. And I was like, what? The exact same thing. But sure, it's happening all over the country. It's marvellous.
And how long since your club has been in senior?
They're not in senior now. They've gone to Premier Intermediate now for next year, unfortunately.
Forgive me.
But they were, yeah, so it was one of those ones where it was a kind of a de facto drop down. So not necessarily expected to win it, but happy to. Always nice to win a county final, though.
It's amazing. Of course, it's amazing how much Clubber has actually done for our awareness of these moments, because we're all completely consumed by our own counties. And I think to be really embedded in every county around the country, up until county final time at least, is difficult. But what Clubber do with their clips is, like, if there is a ridiculously dramatic conclusion to the Wicklow county final or potentially to a Clare Intermediate county final, it's at least on our radar. And we're becoming familiar with, like, the big stories across all grades. Yeah. And I, you know, I think this is all part of our journey towards accepting that the GAA season does not end in July potentially August.
Of course not. It really doesn't. But as I was, like, the argument has always been there is, like, is it getting the national attention it deserves? And I don't think it does deserve national attention as such. It's huge in the local area. If county football or hurling was never played again, the GAA wouldn't disappear. Mm. You know, like, that's the thing that people don't forget. It's all about just, like, national media coverage that we're talking about and big days and big events. But there's no bigger day in your own place than a county final. But at the same time, like, that doesn't necessarily need to matter to the town, to the place two towns over.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's okay. Like, it means something to everybody. Like,
We'll be doing something on this tomorrow evening on the show. Let us know, 0879 180 180. What was your Gaelic Games moment of the weekend? Could it have been Newbridge beating Mara Felt in the Derry final by 2 points? Could it have been Athy beating Naas in the Kildare final, which was certainly a bit of an upset? Mm. On TV on Saturday, people would have seen Ballyboden St. Enda's. Yeah. Beating Athena 116 to 112 was the full-time score there. In Mayo, in the final, Ballina, Westport 115 to 18 points. They're going to have to do it all again. I mean, I was keeping a close eye on Mark O'Connor lording the skies yesterday, which is, I mean, a bittersweet moment for any Kerry fan. You know, the glory of watching Mark O'Connor play in Kerry, and then also the sorrow of knowing that he won't be playing for Kerry next year.
It's interesting that he's still allowed to come back all the time, isn't it? He must negotiate that, I'd say.
When I was thinking to myself, I was like, I can't wait for Mark O'Connor versus Joe O'Connor this weekend in the county final.
Mm.
I was like, let's just make sure he doesn't get, you know, pulled out of that fixture before I get too excited. I'll be excited for when throw-in happens.
You know,
this weekend.
You know, when Kevin Moran went to Manchester United, he's told this story. He used to come home and play for the Dubs and just not tell United about it. And they caught him once or twice. They were like, Kevin, you can't do this. You're not allowed to play. So you're playing in the league for Dublin.
Yeah.
You know? And he come home and he played. And then he really badly pulled his hamstring. And they were like, right, you're never playing Gaelic football again. If you ever even go back to Ireland, we'll cancel your contract.
Did we mention Danes Ford winning the intermediate title in Kilkenny?
Paul Murphy's Danes Ford.
Richie Hoganless. He was there, but not playing, obviously. Paul Murphy at the Hurling Pod flying. I mean, Sarsfield has been in Cork once again, beating Middleton yesterday. And I have mentioned, I'd say, 5% of the results there.
Busy
time of year. It's reaching the business end of the season now. When you talk about national consciousness, it's here now. In the next couple of weeks, it's going to be very, very interesting as we transition into provincial stages. We should circle back to the rugby. There's a couple of bits and pieces from Leinster today.
Yeah, we sent Steve-O off the bowls, so forgive me that I've been left with some of this. But the Ireland rugby squad obviously travel to the US tomorrow for their Autumn Nations series match against New Zealand. Mack Hansen, unfortunately, ruled out of that clash in Chicago. Connacht winger suffered a foot injury in Saturday's one-point loss to the Bulls at the weekend. He actually scored the try that should have got Connacht the win and injured himself in that, which is a real pity, really. They also home games to follow against Japan, Australia and South Africa. The coaching staff are waiting to see if Hansen will recover to play some part in the series. Munster pair Edwin Adogu and Brian Gleeson weren't named in the official squad but were included in the travelling party for the match, but they've both had to drop out due to injury. Leinster's Jimmy O'Brien and Munster's Tom Farrell have both been added to Andy Farrell's selection. Bundy Aki and Robbie Henshaw remain doubts for the game with the All Blacks, but will travel tomorrow. So seems like a lot up in the air.
Yeah,
for that squad at the moment.
When we go through the Leinster setup, then it seems that Paddy McCarthy, Jordan Larmour, they're going into the return to play protocols for their concussions. I mean, Paddy McCarthy is one of the young players, one of the new players that we were excited about potentially seeing. So McCarthy is going to continue to go to the US for the All Blacks meeting. Orji Snyman, he pulled out of the defeat to Munster, so he's being assessed. And then Robin McBride is speaking during the Monday review of the Munster defeat ahead of the visit of the Italians this weekend. So I think we can hear a little bit of Robin McBride.
We obviously didn't get it right. I mean, you know, maybe the start was the worst thing that could have happened to us. Quick start, but, you know, after that, in fairness to Munster, they grew into the game. And, yeah, like I said, we were unable to adapt to it. So, disappointing. But, you know, you've got to say well done to Munster. And, yeah, there's plenty of learnings again, unfortunately. Munster came with a game plan. They executed it. And we were unable to adapt to it. So, yeah, simple as that, really. It's a bit disappointing. But ultimately, you know, I don't think we, as a coaching group, probably looked at ourselves. Maybe we didn't prepare the team well enough for what was to come on Saturday. It's good to see somebody like Michael Mills starting. You had Lee Barron coming on. Just players that have moved on from Leinster, but they're having a good crack at it elsewhere. Do you mean so? You know, chuff for them, obviously. Wouldn't have been the choice at the start of the day, but it's good to see those players. And as you say, for the health of for Irish rugby in particular, you know, that can only be a good thing.
Yeah, Leinster Academy propping up another Munster win.
Well, I think if you look at someone like Michael Milne and you see Paddy McCarthy going off to America, you know, I'd imagine that, like, you at least say, did I get my chance to prove myself? Maybe he did, but I don't know. I find it interesting to say we weren't fully at the race, so we weren't prepared. Why? You know, like, I wonder, do we ask enough of those questions in rugby? In Irish rugby, you know, like everything is a little bit kind of like local and parochial, but like, is Leinster not being at the races entirely, regardless of Munster's performance, which is brilliant and contributed to Leinster's poor performance? Is it acceptable that Leinster with 14 lines were just like, I know all 14 weren't playing, but like that's the level of that team, were just as poor as they were in a home game and have won one of their first four games of the season?
Yeah, I think there are certainly red flags there. And if you want to use the excuse that the Lions actually need to be reintegrated and need a bit of time, well, then Tadhg Byrne's performance just flies in the face of that immediately. So I definitely think there are concerns. Because, like, you must remember that this is a team that is trying to consistently be the best club team in the world.
Yeah.
So the standards are bloody high. Like,
yeah, we're talking about Liverpool and their reaction, probably unfairly. I don't know if we're having enough of it with Leinster.
We know what constitutes success or failure in a Leinster season. And this season, it's, if they don't get that fifth star, it'll be a failure of a season. And if they do, it'll be a success. So, I mean, that's why it's going to be a harsh discussion potentially this evening on Monday Night Rugby about Leinster, because they are still, in terms of the resources they have, and I would argue even the depth of player they have, they are still ahead of Munster. So it's a shock defeat. And then you add in the magnitude of the defeat.
Yeah.
And it's a pretty stunning loss for Leinster in that context. And then you factor in Leo Cullen's not going to be able to work with these players until December.
Yeah,
so I don't know
how poorly the season has started as well. Like, this was supposed, this there already should have been some motivation of like, we have our first line players back now. Let's show you what we can do. Instead, it was just, it added to the malaise.
Yeah, We might just finish up with a clip from Stuart Lancaster. So Connacht, in terms of their health bill, they're playing Munster this weekend. You've got Dennis Buckley, Oisin Dowling, Temi Lasisi. They're all going to be out for this game, but Niall Murray, and Paul Boyle, they've both returned to full training. They're going to be available for selection this weekend. So here's what Stuart Lancaster was saying about all of that.
Well, obviously today has been a lot about reviewing the Bulls game. That's first and foremost. The first thing on a Monday is, you know, to put that game to bed, take the lessons that we can learn, et cetera, et cetera. And obviously during the course of the day, you turn the page to your next opponents, which obviously in this case is Munster. There's a whole lot of selection conversations that are going on as well, you know, decisions on selection and et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, we're just starting to turn the page. Obviously, you know, we all saw the performance at the weekend and we saw how well Munster played up at Croke Park. And, you know, I would know quite a few of those coaches pretty well. So, yeah, it's a huge challenge for us. You know, as you say, Connacht's record down at Tumlin Park isn't the best, as I've done my research now. But, you know, there's a strong belief in our group that we're going in the right direction. You know, one kick here, one moment there against the Bulls, we could have won. And so, you know, we've got a strong internal belief in the direction we're going, but we know it's a huge challenge come Saturday night.
More on the rugby with Fiona Hayes and Liam Toland after 8 o'clock on Monday Night Rugby. We'll take a quick break.
The news round on Off the Ball.
With UPMC Sports Surgery Clinic. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.
This is News Talk.